And welcome to Resting Witch Face, your one-stop haunt for all things spooky, fishy, and more. I'm Bailey Bennett.
Who is now apparently a valley girl.
I know. I'm
sorry. I am Grant Jacoby.
I'll talk normally.
This now. Is our podcast.
This is our podcast. Grant, I have a story to tell you this week.
Please.
I think you're going to like it. It's not related to this podcast, really, but it honestly is one of the scariest things that's ever happened to me.
Oh, really?
I mean, it's not like a, hey, that scared the shit out of me, and you'll see why.
Okay.
So a lot of episodes back, I think I talked about this like dance cardio class that I participate in.
Yes.
It's kind of like Zumba, but they try to make it more of like a club feel. There's like a black light and like all these like strobes and a live DJ for every class. Mm-hmm. It's absurd. I hate that I do it, but it's a really good workout and it's really fun. It's like the only workout I've ever done that I was like, I am enjoying this.
That's good.
Yeah. So as you know, my schedule recently has been very strange. So I have a lot of free time during the weekdays when they put on these community classes, which are like for instructors who are still in training. Mm-hmm. But the classes are still like very good, but they're just cheaper and they're at like random times. So I went to one this past week at like 1 p.m. on like a Wednesday. And I walked in and you like check in at the front desk and the instructor was there and she introduced herself to me. And she goes, looks like it's just you and me today. And I was
no.
like, I'm sorry, what? In my group dance cardio class, I was the only person signed up.
Fuck.
And I was like, can I can just leave. Like, we definitely don't have to do this. And she was like, I'm here. The DJ's here. We're ready to go. We're going to have a great workout. I was like, I want to die. I am ready to die. Please take me. So I had to do a 55 minute dance cardio workout by myself in a room with a black light and strobes on me and a live DJ. DJing just myself.
Were you able to like request some tunes?
No, they have it all like choreographed.
Oh,
so,
yeah,
like certain songs. And
is it like real songs or is it just kind of like
it's okay. Real songs. And she was, I mean, the instructor was great. She was super energetic and fun about it. And I mean, I think I got over like the awkwardness of it pretty quickly, but I am not exaggerating when I say it was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life because this is a really, really hard cardio class already. And now I'm the only person in it. So she's just staring at me the whole time. So there was no half-assing any point of this class because she was like cheering me on individually by name. So.
Oh, that's the worst part.
There were two points in the class where I was sure I was going to faint. But it was like every time I went to go take a sip of water, she would just stand there and wait for me to be done. So I felt a lot of pressure to not drink water or fix my ponytail or try to take a break. So
what I would give to observe that.
I mean, I really just thought you'd get a kick out of that. So
that
I
is
had
incredible.
To share. Yep.
Thank you for sharing. And I have to say that as someone who has taught dance for a number of years, I've been in the opposite scenario where I have been the teacher and
oh my
like
God.
One student shows up. And it's only happened to me once. I've had a couple times where it's been like three mm-hmm. students, or I've had it where it's been zero.
Okay.
And then you're just like, well, cool. I just wasted my time coming out here. But I used to teach at this studio back in Boston, and it was a really weird, it was an hour long class, but it was like, if I got paid $25 an hour for the class, which is mm-hmm. nothing.
No.
But it was one of my early teaching gigs. So I was kind of like, oh, I'm getting paid to teach. But it would be $25 an hour if five people showed up.
Oh my God.
If more than five people showed up, you got half of what the total paid. So basically, like, I think it was that everyone paid $5.
Uh-huh.
So I think it was like, if 5 people show up, you get 25. If 6 people show up, you get 30. Like it just was, mm-hmm. I think they paid $10.
Okay.
It was a $10 right, class. Right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So, but then if like 4 people showed up, you got 20, 3 people, 15, so on and so on.
It's not your fault.
I know. But the worst part was that, you know, it wasn't a class. It was a drop-in class. So like there were times where I would drive out there and it wasn't like I had always a regular recurring, I had like a couple people that would come, mm-hmm. but there were times I'd drive out and like no one would show up. And this was like Tuesdays from like 8 to 9 PM. So I'm like sitting there in this like empty studio and I'm like, well, like I don't even get like $5 for gas, like just, or for just like wasting my time.
Wow, that's so depressing.
So, but I actually prefer that to when it was
one person
where I'm getting paid $5 to teach an hour long class.
Oh my God.
And I just like at a certain point, I remember thinking like, I just want to be like, we don't have to do this.
No.
Like, it's really okay if you just want to.
Oh yeah.
You want to just check out.
Yeah. And I mean, just to be very clear, I'm very bad at dancing. Like
I want to, I kind of want to take one with you.
Oh my, it's, I mean, I would be fun. Horrible. We can do it together.
I'm sure I'd be horrible too. Yeah. I actually am like very cardio challenged.
Yeah. I mean, I'm normally like hiding behind like 3 rows of people. And in this class, I had the clearest view of everything I was doing.
You were the view.
The full length mirror. It was, oh my God.
Why was it? Was just because it was a Wednesday at 1 p.m.
Or? It's a random time. I've done the community classes before and they've been like pretty empty, but I'm talking like 8 people or something. But this, it was like rainy on this day. And she said like everyone just canceled last minute. And I was like, okay, well I'm here. So yeah.
Damn.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
What's
damn,
new
damn.
With you?
What is new with me? Well, I have hey, that scared the shit out of me.
Oh, a real one?
A real one. Well, it's a listener one, I guess, if you will.
Which a guest.
Is a guest. And so this comes from my boyfriend's coworker, Lainey. And we were all hanging out last weekend. Mm-hmm. And Brian was like, oh, like Lainey has a couple like really good scary stories. And I recorded one of them. Okay, I didn't get to record the, so she told the first one first and I should have recorded it and I didn't. But then when I went back and was like, actually, can you tell that one again?
Yeah.
It just like wasn't the same. So I can summarize that one.
Okay, please.
Because it's actually a really, really scary story.
Okay.
So she was babysitting. She grew up in North Carolina and she was babysitting for some neighbors, with 2 little girls and they, I think it was around like 9 p.m. and she heard the front door alarm go off. And I guess like the parents had like set it.
Okay.
And she was in the living room with the 2 kids. And so she was like, oh, it must be like the parents coming home early. Uh-huh. And so she walked into the kitchen, which I guess was on the way to the front door and where her phone was, I guess, to see like, Bailey's face right now is like, and as she was getting in there, she was getting a phone call from the parents.
Uh-huh.
And she answered and she was like, hi, like, did you guys just come home? And they're like, no, we're just like calling in just like to check in. Actually, we're going to be home a little late. And she was like, well, the front door just, the alarm for the front door just went off.
Okay.
And so they were like, that isn't us.
Oh my God.
So I'm forgetting some of the details, but she ended up like taking the girls outside and like called 911.
Yeah.
And as they're like standing on the front lawn, they see the intruder walk out of the house.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
What?
And he apparently got arrested. And I guess he was like some sort of like drug addict.
Uh-huh.
Who I guess the only thing that had been stolen in the house was the medicine cabinet had been raided.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is why partially I think when the alarm was going off, he wasn't like,
he just kind of like startled.
I think it was kind of like he was on a mission. Like he wasn't just like looking to rob.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So that's one terrifying.
That's story. I can't imagine. Okay.
So Lainey, if you're listening to this, I didn't really tell this correctly, but I do have this next story in her own words. Okay. So I will play that for you.
I can't wait. Why does so many things happen to this girl?
I don't know. But she also was telling it like so cavalier, just being like, oh yeah. And then like the like person who like might've been coming in to like murder me was just like, we saw him walk out of the house and we were like screaming and crying, but like, whatever. I was like, oh God, you're okay. Keeping it together. Okay. So here's story number 2 from Lainey.
Okay, so I was in Myrtle Beach on a weekend vacation heading back to New York City. And the plane starts boarding. Like, it's like, and you're at the last one because I, like, bought the cheap ticket or whatever. So my phone rings, the plane's boarding, and it's a number that I don't know. And I answer it, and they say, "Is this Lainey?" And I said, "Yes." And they said, "There was a car accident. Your dad hit our little boy. A gun was drawn, and we have your dad hostage." And immediately, like, you're obviously like, "Excuse me?" So, and they say, "Are you alone?" And I said, "No, I'm in the airport." And they said, "Okay, your dad told us to call you because you were the one who could handle this." And so I'm going, "Excuse me? Like, you have my dad?" Also, background story, my dad has a truck. They knew his name, and my dad has a concealed permit. So he has a gun. So all, it was like all matching up. And so they're like, "You need to go to a quiet location where nobody can see you. You can't, if you go get help, we'll find out and hurt your dad." And so I'm like running across the airport to find a security guard and muting it and to try to get him to help me find airport security, which is stellar in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And so then we finally, I'm like muting it. They're like yelling at me. They're screaming at me. I say, "I need to talk to my dad. I need to talk to my dad." And so in the background, I can hear him yelling to his friends, like, "She wants to talk to him. Like, drag him over here. Drag him over here." And so then it's like someone, it sounds like someone's like muffled screaming, yelling. So at this point, I'm like sobbing. And he's screaming at me like, "Lainey, why are you upset? Like, if you do what I say, like, then it's all going to be fine." And he was like, "You need to find an ATM." And I was like, "I'm at the airport." And he was like, "You need to leave." And so meanwhile, I'm telling the person who's boarding the plane, I was like telling her, I'm like, "I'm dealing with a hostage situation." She was like, we can't help you. So finally, the police comes over and I've tried to call my parents from other people's cell phones and they're not answering. So I can't confirm that they're alive or that anywhere my dad is. And so then finally we're all gathered around in a circle and the policeman, I'm like, "Should I get on my flight?" And the policeman's like, "I can't tell you what to do." And I was like, "This is your job to tell me what to do in this situation." And so finally he goes, "You're just going to have to hang up and call your dad. Like, you're just going to have to do it." And I do it in that moment. I'm like, "I just killed my dad." And so then I immediately call my dad and he goes, "Hello?" And I go, "Dad, are you okay?" Like, I'm like, he's like, I'm like, "Where are you?" He's like, "I'm at home." And I was like, "Are you kidding me? Are you alive?" He goes, "Yeah, I'm fine. About to take the dog for a walk." And that was it.
So you don't know who
that No, was? They kept trying to call me, but I don't know who it is. And then I Googled it, and there were lots of stories about it from this particular number.
Holy shit. Are you fucking kidding
Isn't
me?
Isn't that crazy?
That's like the craziest story I've ever heard.
Like, it's not, it's like not even.
That's
like
a movie.
Yeah. Like, if it weren't like true, like, I wouldn't.
Yeah. If I weren't like hearing it from someone that you know, I'd be like, mm-hmm. There's no way.
I know. I mean, luckily everything was fine.
Yeah. But like, who were those people and why did they know so much information about her? I guess they probably could have found it pretty easily.
Well, it sounds to me like this is some sort of scam that they do.
For what reason? To get money?
Probably.
Oh my God. Wait, sorry. I'm so sorry that happened to her.
I know. I think that probably they wanted her to send cash. It's just such a weird thing.
I mean, it's so elaborate, but of course, it's like the thing where you get someone in a panic mode where they feel like they have to do whatever you say. And then like, you'll do mm-hmm. anything because you think that someone in your family is in danger, but like, holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if that ever happens to any of you guys, it's probably not true. Like, hopefully.
Yeah, this is actually, this is pretty relevant because this also pertains to the story I'm going to tell this week. And it's been this recurring theme we keep talking about. It's like, if a wrong, like a number you don't have calls you, like,
mm-hmm.
you don't have to answer.
Yeah, you really don't have to answer. If it's something important, they'll leave you a voicemail. Like, that's what I firmly believe. Wow.
Yeah, no, that's so.
I'm so glad that you recorded that.
Me too. And
I'm sorry that like you guys were definitely just like out getting drinks and hanging out. And Grant was like, "I'm sorry. Hold on. I have a podcast."
But if any of you listeners out there have scary stories, please continue to send them to us. And they don't have to just be ghost stories. They can be brushes with death or with a weird like rant, like fake ransom.
Oh my God. Literally anything.
Yeah. And you can type them in, or if you want to do kind of, I don't know, if voice recordings are pretty easy to.
Yeah. Hopefully we're going to figure out how to put it in that one that we just listened to.
But, yeah, we just please continue to just share your spooky shit with us because we love hearing it.
rwfpodcast@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. Do we want to move on to our last segment before the story? You want to talk about some badass bitches?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you sure? I can go first.
No, I can go.
Okay.
Okay. So mine isn't like particularly like timely or anything like crazy happening recently with this person. Actually, that is not true. My baddest bitch of the week is Shonda Rhimes.
Oh yeah.
First and foremost, because she wrote the greatest film of all time, Crossroads, starring Britney Spears.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, that was a true piece of treasure I found out not that long ago.
Oh wow. Okay.
But also because, for those of you that don't know, shame on you if you don't, she has created such amazing TV shows such as Grey's Anatomy and Scandal, and produces other shows like How to Get Away with Murder.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like this like incredible Uber producer. And I think she just signed a $3 million deal with Netflix.
Yeah, or something crazy.
I think it was more, I don't know, more than that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't have facts, but I think she's just an amazing innovator who has created some of the most diverse, well-rounded characters and casts on television. I recently, probably about a year ago, I binge watched all of Grey's Anatomy.
Mm-hmm.
I'd seen probably seasons like 1 through 6 in when they aired, and then I just kind of fell off the bandwagon. But got right back on and like watched all 13 seasons.
I can't believe that show is still on.
I know season 15. But even rewatching it, it's just so amazing to see these incredible casts that are really, really diverse and feature white and black and Asian and just like all these different colors of characters who.
And different sexualities.
Different sexualities. But that it's never like an. I was specifically with. Specifically with the race, is that the characters aren't built around a certain race. I think they were built as characters, and then they were cast with the best actors who fit those characters, which I think is like really. Great. I feel like that's how it should be done more. Really, it doesn't matter. Like not having to write a character that needs to be white.
Right.
Basically.
And even though most characters, no matter how they're written, are cast white because you know, this is where we are.
Society is terrible.
But
I think that she has just really given a voice to a lot of voiceless, marginalized sectors of society. And being a black woman, I think she just is such a pioneer, and I think she just deserves a lot of respect, and especially also having this kind of surge of success later in her life. Not that she's old, but you know, definitely into her 30s and 40s, I think, before the success took off. Just is also a nice reminder that you don't need to find all your success when you're a youngin.
Yeah. Gotta remember that.
Yeah, you don't need to follow the Hannah Montana guide to fame.
Please don't, actually. That's a great one. Mine is also television related because,
shocker.
I mean, what else is new? Yeah. So I, in my 25th year, have just now begun watching My So-Called Life, which I've is a show. Yeah. It's, I think it was obvious. It was before our time, but it's a show that I've heard so much about all through my life as being just like one of the most iconic like teen dramas, like one of those classic TV shows that was gone too soon, like taken before its time, only has one season, like 19 episodes or something like that, and probably deserved a lot more than that. But I just want to give a shout out to Claire Danes because I feel like I finally like understand her and like how amazing she is, and
she's
like
really
truly
good.
Is a revelation in this show, being like as young as she was. And the show itself it's really good. I mean, it's a high school drama. There's definitely no getting around that, but it focuses on a lot of really interesting issues that are still really timely today. And I was really surprised that it focuses on Claire Danes' character's parents a lot more than I thought, and it examines their relationship and like what it means to be in a marriage after all those years, and like how you kind of work on a marriage when you have kids, and their relationship with their children, which is really interesting. And I feel like it was not what I was expecting from a show like this, and like isn't something that you get all that often. It also had like one of the first gay characters on primetime TV ever. And I also must give a shout out to Winnie Holtzman, who is the creator and writer of this show. And like to be a female showrunner in like the 1990s was even more rare than it is today. So again, just ladies making really good TV.
Has she done anything since?
So she produced and wrote that show that was on like ABC Family called Huge, about that fat camp.
Oh.
You know. But apparently she also was announced as the screenplay writer for Wicked, which is that becoming a movie in 2019? I am just finding this out. Oh my
That's
God.
That's been rumored for a long time, so I'll believe it when I see it, but...
It's like there's an IMDb page made for it.
Oh, whoa.
Guys, this is
breaking news.
Seriously. Yeah, anyway, so.
Well, no, that's a good one because have you seen Homeland?
No, I've only seen a couple episodes.
I would say the first three seasons.
I heard the first season is like unreal and then it just gets bad, but maybe that's
maybe
not
it's
true.
The first two. I don't watch it anymore, but the first couple seasons, I think, were really, really strong and really showcased Claire Danes' acting before it became kind of a parody of itself.
Right.
I was actually talking to my parents about it the other day because they were saying that they loved the show until it was satirized on SNL.
Oh, really?
And then that like kind of called out her like quivering chin.
Right.
And whatnot.
Yeah,
and
I mean, like,
take it seriously.
She's not perfect, but she...
No, but she's really good.
And she's been doing good work for a lot of years.
Yeah, I mean, Romeo and Juliet from the 90s is pretty much a classic. Yeah. Family Stone.
Oh, yeah. I love that movie.
It's a sad one.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, those are our bitches.
Bitches.
Are we going to get into the spooky stuff now?
Yeah, I think it's time. So, I know last week you did a... missing persons case.
I did.
And I just had to follow up with another one.
Great. And my girl ended up not actually really being missing. She just kind of...
Well, so did mine, except she just ended up being dead.
Oh, okay. Spoilers.
So this is the story of Dorothy Scott.
Okay.
Most of the information I got, and by most of I mean all, came from Wikipedia, True Crime Diary, and medium.com.
Okay.
So Dorothy Scott was born on... I chose this because I'd never heard of it. And I also was thinking about what you were talking about last week with the Surrey Crews police. And
right.
About how they drum up information about these missing persons. And I feel like the more and more I feel like there's certain cases you hear about that you're like, oh, like I've heard about like yeah. someone like Natalie Holloway, where you're like, oh, you've heard that story 100 times.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard of her?
Have I mentioned Jodi Arias yet? Natalie Holloway deserve justice.
Of course.
I'm also saying that I'm like, I pulled that on my ass. I'm like, I don't know anything about that case.
No, but it's a really, really famous one.
Yeah.
I mean, she went missing on like a school trip
Aruba.
To Aruba.
Yeah.
Like,
she was pretty and white and... So it got a lot of attention, but not that it doesn't deserve attention, but I think that it just made me think more about the cases you don't hear so much about.
Right.
And this one is a weird one.
Okay. I can't wait.
So this podcast, I think has, as we've talked about before, is kind of shown a light into some of our talking tendencies, whether that be,
oh God, I mean,
but I've really learned about myself and I'm calling myself out in this moment is I love to start talking about something and being like, okay, I'm going to get to it. But one more thing.
Oh yeah. For sure.
So, enough of that.
I mean, mouth noises galore, if you guys...
I know.
...hadn't figured that out yet. I don't know what you're
doing.
But
you know what? We're not perfect. You wouldn't be here if you were looking for perfection.
Mm-mm.
So, on that note, Dorothy Scott was born on April 23rd, 1948, and was a single mother living in Stanton, California, with her aunt and her four-year-old son 1980. This is where the story takes place. But she was born in 1948, so she was 32.
Okay.
She was a secretary for two jointly owned Anaheim, California stores. One that sold psychedelic items.
What does that mean?
I'll tell you, because Wikipedia says that it means love beads and lava lamps.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this was a queen.
Yeah, I mean, this we're coming out of the 70s, mm-hmm. which I think, well, I guess the 60s was more of the psychedelic, whatever. It was still a long time ago where people really were into that sort of shit, that hippie shit. And so one of the stores was that. The other one was a head shop.
What?
I don't know what that is. There's okay. a lot of talk about head shops.
I mean, we have to assume they sold heads, shrunken heads.
Shrunken heads, head cheese, like head, like blowjobs.
Yep, they sold those.
All sorts of heads.
Okay, great.
Co-workers and friends of hers said that she preferred staying at home, like same.
Me.
that she was a devout Christian, not me.
No.
And did not drink or do drugs. So one out of three. Mm-hmm. Her parents, who also lived in Anaheim, babysat her grandson while Dorothy worked and
their grandson.
Oh, yeah, sorry, their grandson.
Okay.
Whose name was, I think, Sean.
Okay.
And her father said his daughter may have dated on occasion, but that she had no steady boyfriend or family no steady boyfriend that the family knew of. And the father of her child was not in the picture.
Okay.
I believe he lived across country, but.
All right.
So months before her abduction, mm-hmm. long spoilers, she gets abducted. Mm-hmm. Dorothy began receiving anonymous phone calls at work from an unidentified male.
God damn it.
Yep. That's
what's with these fucking phone calls?
Well, it's why I picked.
Okay.
She told her mother that she recognized the voice but could not remember the man's name.
Oh, that's horrible.
Isn't that really creepy? Like hearing something like you can place it, but you're not sure how.
Okay.
The caller alternatively told Dorothy exclaimed to her his love and devotion to her, but then would also threaten to kill her.
Oh, no.
The caller was probably also stalking her because he could provide accurate details of her day-to-day life and with, like, facts to prove that he knew what she was up to. Her mother once recounted, one day he called and said to go outside because he had something for her. She went out and there was a single dead rose on the windshield of her car.
Not even an alive rose.
No.
Oh, quite dead. My God. That's like Sidney Prescott.
Yeah, that's... Yeah,
worse.
But dead.
But this is real life.
Her mother also said of another phone call that was especially horrifying, in which the man reportedly told her, okay, now you're going to come my way, and when I get you alone, I will cut you up into bits so no one will ever find you.
What do you even do? Like, what do you do? You could not live your life. I could not continue to live my life.
Well, apparently, she considered buying a handgun.
Okay.
And also began taking karate lessons.
Oh.
I know, like, honey.
I mean, good for you.
But yeah, I mean, I guess, well...
What I'll say right now is it sounds like maybe it's someone who like comes into her place of work a lot, which is maybe why she would like recognize the voice but not know the guy's name and why he would call her at work.
So I'm glad you mentioned that because I might mention this later, but I definitely remember it in the research that so since she worked for these two shops, mm-hmm. they actually had an office in the back that she worked at.
Okay.
So she didn't interact with customers.
Oh.
So the theory is that potentially the only time. And she didn't really get out much. So mm-hmm. they either had to be seeing her as she walked to and from mm-hmm. the job, or they knew her from some other walk of life. But she just didn't really do much. So like it doesn't like she was a pretty like low key gal.
Oh my God. That's my worst nightmare that like even if I'm staying home and watching Netflix all day, I can still have a stalker.
Well, I think what we can gain from this is that we need better stalking laws in this country because she should have been able to call the police and say, I'm getting these threatening phone calls mm-hmm. and something would have been done about it.
Right.
And it wouldn't have taken for her to get abducted and, spoiler alert, murdered.
Oh my God. Okay.
So at 9 p.m. on May 28th, 1980, Dorothy was at an employee meeting at work. She noted that her coworker, Conrad Bostrin.
That's not a real name.
that he didn't look well and that he had a red mark on his arm. She and another coworker named Pam Head. Maybe that's the head shop. It's Pinhead's shop.
Okay.
Not actually, but I don't know. They left the meeting. The three of them left the meeting to take Conrad to the emergency room at the University of California Irvine Medical Center. It is important to note that this evening, Dorothy was wearing a red scarf.
Okay.
That's going to come back later. And on the way to the ER, she stopped by her parents' house on the way to the hospital, as I just said, to check on her son.
Okay.
So she was seen in between.
Got it.
Actually, that's not even that important. But once at the hospital, medical personnel determined that Conrad had suffered a black widow spider bite.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. What the fuck? And while he was being treated, Pam said she and Dorothy remained in the ER waiting room and that at no time did Dorothy leave her side. Also important fact. Conrad was discharged around 11 p.m., so about 2 hours after they got to the hospital, and was given a prescription. Dorothy offered to bring her car to the exit as she did not want Conrad to have to walk too far in his condition, since obviously he was still not feeling well since he had been bitten by a deadly spider.
I mean, he was just gaining his spidey senses, so.
And this is the story of Peter Parker.
And that's about as much superhero knowledge as you're getting out of us on this podcast. Yeah.
The one time Pam did say that Dorothy left her side was as they're walking out to the parking lot, Dorothy went to use the restroom.
Okay.
Pam and Conrad filled his prescription and waited at the exit for Dorothy to get her car and come back to pick them up. When they did not see her after a few minutes, they went out into the ER's parking lot. Suddenly, they saw Dorothy's car speeding towards them. Its headlights blinded them, so they could not see who was behind the wheel. They waved their arms to try and get the driver's attention, but the car sped past them and took a sharp right out of the parking lot. They attempted to run after the car, but its headlights suddenly went out. It left the parking lot and vanished into the night.
Oh, no.
So.
Is that the last?
That was the last time.
She's never seen again.
She was never seen alive again.
Shit.
So, obviously, Pam and Conrad were like, WTF. Like, because she was like, I'm going to go get the car. Like, so you don't need to walk. And he's like, bye.
Yeah.
So, at first, they were like, oh. There must have been an emergency with her son and she didn't have time. This is also the early 80s. It's not like she could shoot them a text. And maybe she needed to go there was an emergency with her child and that took precedent. But then they expected to hear from her. And when they did not, after a couple hours, they called the UCI police. But they basically said there's no cause for alarm because not enough time had passed. They also then called Dorothy's parents to see if she had picked up her son, Sean. And they said they hadn't seen her since she had dropped by earlier.
Oh, no.
So
it's just so scary to me to like know in your gut that something bad might happen to you and to just have no one help you.
Well, and especially that like those things should have been connected and should have been like, if they had known that she'd been being stalked and that she like disappeared in a very strange circumstance, those are precious hours that you can be looking for someone.
Right. Where they're like, Give it a day. Like, we'll see.
Well, is it something where someone needs to be missing? How many hours does someone need to be missing before you can file a missing persons report?
I thought it was like 24 or 48.
Something stupid where everyone, but then also all the information shows that those first 24 to 48 hours are the most crucial because if you've been kidnapped, they're usually if I feel like if a kidnapping occurs, the kidnapper is going to kill you, it's not going to happen right away.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be after some time, which is kind of morbid, but welcome to a morbid podcast. Around 4:30 a.m. on May 29th, so the following day, so Dorothy had been missing about 5 hours. Her car, which was a white 1973 Toyota station wagon, was found burning in an alley about 10 miles from the hospital.
Great.
With no sign of her inside or nearby.
Awesome.
In the days that followed, UCI police investigated the disappearance, so I guess they finally were. They finally were like, oh, her car's on fire.
And she's nowhere to be found. Cool.
And
I mean, like, we don't have to shit on the investigation on the investigators. Like this was the norm at the time.
That is true. The police advised Jacob Scott, Dorothy's father, to keep this on the DL for now. Don't talk to newspapers, no television reporters, no media in case that they didn't want to cause any panic and potentially scare off her kidnapper. However, that all changed when after the disappearance, the telephone rang at the Scott's house and Dorothy's mother, Vera, answered. And a male voice inquired, are you related to Dorothy Scott? Her mother replied, yes. The caller then said, I've got her. and hung up. Oh my God. So after that horrifying phone call, another week passed and Jacob Scott had run out of patience that he had agreed to wait and talk to the media. So he contacted the Santa Ana Register and they ran a short story about his daughter's disappearance. On the day the story was released, a call came to the desk at the Santa Ana Register to the editor, Pat Riley. "I killed her," the male caller told Riley.
"Oh my God.
I killed Dorothy Scott. She was my love. I caught her cheating with another man. She denied having someone else. I killed her."
Oh my
the
God.
Caller then authenticated himself by providing details that no one else would know, and details that had not been printed, such as that he knew that Dorothy had been wearing a red scarf that night. He knew about Conrad's spider bite.
Oh my God.
And he claimed that Dorothy had phoned him to tell him that she was actually at the UCI Medical Center. However, Pam, good old Pam, insisted that this could not have been the case since Dorothy never left her side throughout the evening except once to use the bathroom right before heading to the parking lot.
Right.
So there wouldn't have been enough time, even if she had called this person to say...
Yeah, it's not like she had a cell phone.
Mm-hmm. And there wouldn't have been enough time if she had spoken to this person to say, "I'm at the hospital," that he could have gotten there in time to kidnap her and speed off in her car.
Right.
Which begs the question, how did he know?
Right. Because, like, and, like, how did he know about the spider bite unless she told him?
Well, I have a theory that's not in here, which this is, like, kind of crazy, is if somehow the spider bite, this doesn't make any sense, but, like, because also I don't know how present...
He orchestrated the spider bite?
Well, only because I don't know how present Black Widow spiders are in California. But
that's
like,
true.
If you wanted to get someone kind of alone, I guess, why would you send them to a hospital?
Yeah, there are easier ways.
There's just something seems very coincidental about this strange scenario. Like, it wasn't like she was kidnapped from her house or on her way to work. It was that she was at the hospital with some friends who had just been bit by a Black Widow. And as she's going to get her car, she's kidnapped.
I mean, parking garages, man. Like,
yo.
Parking lots, parking garages.
Stay away from them.
The scariest. Okay, go on.
Go on. I will. So the first suspect in the kidnapping was the father of Dorothy's child, Sean. But he had an airtight alibi since he was at home in Missouri on the night that Dorothy disappeared.
Uh-huh.
Kind of hard to get from Missouri to California.
Right.
They questioned everyone at the psych shop. However, as I mentioned before, the consensus was that since Dorothy worked out of the public view and her office was in the back of the shop, it was unlikely that her stalker could have been a customer.
Mm-hmm.
The police looked at local sex offenders in the area, as well as members of Dorothy's social circle for any potential leads or even anyone who might seem remotely suspicious, but they turned up with zilch. Dorothy's parents, as well as police detectives, consulted a number of psychics, but to no avail.
Okay. Sounds like something we would do, but...
Yeah. Well, I think it's pretty rare. It was mostly of note because I think it's kind of rare to hear of police officers consulting psychics. I think it's usually...
Yeah.
Like, the families and the police are like... I mean, from what I've seen on Law & Order SVU...
What
I've
the police seen on are like, psych.
Yeah, the police are like, don't do that.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the investigation went cold. However, you know what did not go cold? Those phone calls...
Oh my God.
Dorothy's parents.
No.
Almost every Wednesday for 4 years.
Shut the fuck up.
The phone would ring at the Scott's home.
Hump day, man.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That's so horrible.
The calls came in during the day when Dorothy's mother was home alone. The caller would either say, "I've got her," or reaffirm that he had killed her. Or the creepiest of all, I think, is he would just say, "Is Dorothy there?"
Like, you know she's not here, bitch.
But there's something like really no, like, mind horrible. Fuck about being like, just like reminding you like, "Hi, is Dorothy there?"
Oh my God.
Like, ugh!
Out of all of these times, the police couldn't trace the call.
So.
I mean, I guess the answer is no.
Well.
Am I?
No, you're perfectly timed question because I'm about to answer
okay,
that.
Okay, great.
So the police planted a recorder in the Scott residence.
Okay.
So they could record the voice on the call.
Cool.
No one could recognize the voice, which was apparently gruff and plainly disguised. And they actually end up also trying to tap to see if they could locate where the call was coming from, but the caller never stayed on long enough for the calls to be traced.
Oh my God.
Cause he would call and just like say that shit. And I'm sure it can't be like, can you imagine, especially every Wednesday, it's like constant fucked up reminder.
That's so frustrating.
Oh, your child is missing and probably dead by this man.
Did they ever try to like change their number or like move?
I guess not. The calls actually,
well, I mean, I guess they probably wanted him to keep calling cause they were trying to figure it out.
Yeah. And also like if there's a chance that their daughter's still alive, like they would know, she would know where to find them. The calls finally stopped in April 1984 when Jacob, Dorothy's father, not Vera, her mother, answered a nighttime call from the unknown tormentor. It's obviously a cut and paste. And the speculation is that the call stopped because once a different voice answered the phone, that the caller assumed that someone else had moved into the house.
Oh, really?
Actually, they say that, but...
That's weird.
On August 6th, 1984, a construction worker discovered first dog and then human bones about 30 feet from the Santa Ana Canyon Road. The bones, which were a pelvis, an arm, two thighs, and a skull, were partially charred, and authorities believe that they had been there for at least 2 years since a bushfire had swept through the site in 1982.
Mm-hmm.
A turquoise ring and watch were also found near the body. Dorothy's mother identified the ring as Dorothy's and said that the watch had stopped at, it was like broken and it like stopped at 12:30 a.m. apparently on May 29th. Or basically the watch had been broken at the exact hour where it would have been an hour after she had been last seen alive.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. And on August 14th, the bones were identified as Dorothy's via dental records, and an autopsy was performed, although it could not determine the cause of death.
Okay.
So
what about the dog?
I don't know.
She didn't have a dog, right?
I don't think she had a dog. I think, I don't know
maybe
if
maybe it was a coincidence?
I mean, I think her some sites I saw said that her remains were found next to the dog. Another one says they were underneath the dog bones.
Oh.
So there's a chance that it was trying to be like hidden, like it looked like it was just animal remains when it was actually human remains. But okay. I'm also wondering if the phone calls stopped coming in because her body was found.
Right. I feel like that would make sense.
Although it was about 4 months after the phone call stopped. I don't know.
Okay.
After the announcement of Dorothy's death ran in the newspaper, the Scott family received two more phone calls from a now familiar voice asking, is Dorothy there?
Oh my God.
Like, leave them alone.
Like, she's really not there. Leave them alone. Oh my God.
I know. Jacob Scott died in 1994, 1 week shy of his 70th birthday. And Vera Scott died in 2002, both without ever having learned the identity of the man who killed their daughter.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry.
This isn't going to have a happy ending.
Oh, no, we don't know who did it.
Oh, fuck.
Well, there is an internet theory, but unfortunately, her parents never lived to find out who had killed the daughter and who was tormenting them for many, many years.
Great.
Via the telephone.
Amazing.
It's important to note that most people who do communicate with after they committed crimes, such as the Zodiac or BTK, usually reach out to press and to law enforcement.
Yeah.
Usually because they want some level of recognition or they want to prove that they can outsmart the investigators. And then it's really, really rare that a perpetrator will reach out to a victim's family or even to call the family. Over, and especially over a number of years.
Is it possible that whoever this was had some kind of personal relationship with like the whole family? Because it seems weird to me that he would, I mean, like maybe he's just tormenting her because it's his victim's mother, but like maybe he also had some kind of relationship with the mom too, but I guess she didn't recognize the voice.
I don't know. Yeah. I think that it just was probably, I mean, obviously this asshole was obsessed with Dorothy and had been stalking her and wanted to have her. And so I think that once he'd probably had killed her, it sounds like he probably killed her pretty quickly after he kidnapped her, even though her remains weren't found for a number of years. So I think maybe this just was a way of continuing the fantasy.
Yeah.
And getting that kind of that rise. Thrill. Yeah, that thrill.
Wait, so what's the internet theory?
So one theory of who might have killed Dorothy Scott can be traced from a blog by an author named Crime Blogger 1983, mm-hmm. who apparently had the opportunity to speak with Sean Scott, Dorothy's son, who clued this blogger into the name Mike Butler. Sean became aware of Mike Butler through some of Dorothy's old friends in Missouri. Butler knew Dorothy through his sister, who also worked at the same shop that Dorothy worked at.
Okay.
And according to those who knew Dorothy, he had become obsessed with her.
Well, I mean, that's probably mm-hmm. a good guess.
Butler also lived around the Santiago Mountains and was known to be very unstable and had been involved in cult activities.
Oh.
And allegedly law enforcement was well aware of him at the time, but with not enough sufficient evidence to take action, they didn't really follow up on it. And I believe he is now dead.
Great.
There wasn't a whole lot of other information about that.
If all of that's true, it sounds like, you know, kind of a surefire win right there. But
yeah, but I think just it's all speculation, right? Because sorry, like all the noises with the shit I'm fiddling with. I think it's all just speculation because without any concrete evidence, in theory, it could. And that's, I think, why this case kind of freaks me out, because it wasn't like, oh, this person, you know, that she was being stalked by an ex-boyfriend, or she was being stalked because, like, you know, it was this like particular customer. Even if it were a customer, it's like, it's still so fucking random.
Totally. And no, cases like this freak me out so bad.
Because you've never heard a story of like, oh, this person was stalked by someone because they led them on.
Right.
It's never.
And even if they did, like,
who fucking cares?
Yeah, that's not no excuse for you to then stalk that person. Yeah, it actually really pisses me off that he was like, she was my lover and like she was cheating on me and like mm-hmm. she called me and told me to come here. It's like, no, she didn't do any of those things. And even if she did, you don't get to murder her.
Yeah. You really don't. You don't. Guess what? You don't get to murder anyone.
No, you don't.
Unless.
Yep.
Whenever I hear stories about like, oh, this so-and-so killed their longtime abuser, or like they,
mm-hmm. oh yeah.
You know, like they killed the person who's trying to rape them. I'm like,
oh yeah. Okay. I mean, self-defense. That's like a good,
no, but even if it's like mm-hmm. they weren't an imminent threat, it's like,
right. Like mommy, dead and dearest, like, That one, I'm kind of like, what other choice did she have? I don't know. We don't have to get into that.
No. That's a horse of a different color, because that case is, for those of you that don't know, the case of Gypsy Rose Blanchard.
Mm-hmm.
I
think in a really much older episode we did, but
there's an amazing documentary about that case called Mommy, Dead and Dearest on HBO Go that there's a lot of gray area. I would agree in that case.
Yeah. Because I mean, she was like, abused.
Well, she was the victim of Munchausen by proxy.
Yeah.
But it's also that her boyfriend was the one who killed.
It's
gross.
Great. Yeah.
Anyways, back to Dorothy. The internet also, I think this was on True Crime Diary, has potentially linked the Dorothy Scott murder to a different case. So potentially there's some sort of linkage, or it's just kind of like another case of mm-hmm. similar fashion, but you decide. So one of the similar cases that comes to mind, in relation to Dorothy Scott, is also the disappearance of 17-year-old Amy Billing in 1974, who was last seen hitchhiking in her hometown of Coconut Grove, Florida. So it's probably not related because we're also going cross country, but you never know.
We
already have connections between California and Missouri. So why not throw Florida in there?
Yep.
America's penis. Billing has never been, Billig, B-I-L-L-I-G, okay. Amy. Well, anyways, I'll just call her Amy. Amy has still never been located and remains a missing person. However, almost immediately after her disappearance, her mother began receiving telephone calls from a man who said his name was Hal Johnson and that he'd abducted Amy and sold her to a biker gang as a sex slave.
Oh, great.
Over the next two decades, Hal continued to call her mother, Susan, and with a bunch of bogus clues and red herrings that sent her mother searching all over the U.S.
Oh my God.
Interviewing biker transients and trying to figure out, you know, what happened to her daughter, which nearly bankrupted her. And she and her husband eventually had to like sell their business and move into a smaller home because she was spending all this money trying to follow these bogus leads.
Oh my God. That is so upsetting, because mm-hmm. it's like, no matter what he tells you, even if it's like the most bogus thing, you're just like, you're like, I have to follow up on it because, like, what if my daughter's there?
I know.
So you just ruined another person's life.
I know.
At the same time. Oh, my God.
It gets worse.
Great.
This is a 2-for-1 episode.
Amazing.
After Susan's husband passed away from lung cancer, good old Hal Johnson called to, you know, maybe pay his respects. No.
Send his condolences?
He said, Ned's dead, isn't he? You're alone now, aren't you?
Oh, my God.
You'd better watch out.
I got chills.
Hal Johnson continued to call Susan, saying that her daughter had been trafficked overseas and wound up in Saudi Arabia by ways of London, where the sheikh who had purchased, was her name Amy?
Mm-hmm.
Had purchased Amy, had made a special request that he wanted to see the mother with her daughter together.
Oh my God.
So basically he was calling to be like, you're next.
Oh my God.
The phone calls continued over the years, sometimes 6 or 7 each night, until 1995, when advanced call tracing technology had finally uncovered the identity of who had been harassing the Billigs. And it turns out he was 48-year-old Henry Johnson Blair, not Hal Johnson. And he was a U.S. Customs agent and had been so for 25 years.
Oh, my God. I don't know why that upset me so much.
Well, I think in
everything about him is upsetting me.
Well, yeah, anything in any case when it's someone, especially who's in like a position of power or government official, you're like, you should know better.
Yeah.
But also, no politicians know better. After he was caught, Blair said that he was just making, this was over the course of 21 years, by the way.
Holy fuck.
And he said that he was just making a bunch of crank calls.
No.
And
I'm so mad.
Mm-hmm, and blamed it on his undiagnosed OCD.
No.
Stress at work.
Mm-mm.
And his alcoholism.
That's, you know what, buddy? That's something you got to fucking deal with on your own and not get this stranger involved.
Mm-hmm. He was convicted of aggravated stalking in 1996 and was sentenced to how many years in prison?
Oh.
2.
No. Oh. Oh my God.
But in 1999, Susan Billig accepted a $5 million settlement out of a lawsuit that she had filed against Blair.
Get it, girl.
Although she never received an apology.
Oh my. But like, wait, so what the fuck happened to her daughter? Did this guy have her? Or did he like...
We don't know.
I mean, he wasn't charged for her murder or kidnapping.
He was never charged with her murder and continued to deny that he had anything to do with her disappearance and that he was just making these prank calls. But he could never be completely ruled out. And there's kind of like a lot of just like some last couple of bizarre details, which is that in her last entry, in her last diary entry, Amy had written, Hank says as soon as I finish school, he wants me to go to South America with him. I told him he's crazy.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Did he know Amy knew him?
Well, this guy's name is Henry.
Yeah, but Hank is a nickname for Henry.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. I'm not reading my own notes. It says Henry Blair's nickname was Hank. And furthermore, he had taken quite a few trips to South America in the early 1970s.
Oh, my God.
Well,
maybe, like, look into that more.
Maybe.
What the fuck?
But he died in 2006.
Great.
And we'll never know what happened to Amy or to Dorothy, and whether these cases are connected in any way, it's really hard to say. Probably not, but it still felt like these are two very unusual instances of a potential perpetrator harassing.
Right. I almost like want them to be the same person because it's worse that there are two of these assholes doing this to people in this country. And the reality is there's a lot more.
Well, and then also, you know, there's a chance that Henry Blair was not responsible for Amy's disappearance, in which case he just was that fucking asshole who just was getting drunk and calling.
I mean, that's the worst.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Okay, well, that was a doozy.
Yeah. Coming on that ride with us.
Is that the end of that story? It's really uplifting.
The one detail I forgot to mention was that a photo was taken on Amy's camera before her disappearance, which showed a van in it that was identical to the descriptions of a white van that Henry Blair had driven at the time.
Mm, I mean, I think it really sounds like it was this guy.
I think that it was this guy, and I think there just was enough evidence to convict him. And I think that he was probably a perpetrator, probably sleeping with this young girl. Right. And he said he was going to take her to South America, and she probably thought he was going to, and instead he killed her.
Great.
And harassed her mother for 21 years. And potentially along the way, maybe made his way to California. But it also sounds like this Mike Butler might also be involved with Dorothy's disappearance. But again, these fucking phone calls. Don't answer your phone.
No, don't call anyone. I mean, you can text now. Why are you calling?
Although we know you can still harass strangers via text. Abby from work.
Okay, cool.
Well,
you want to have a quick bitch session?
Yeah, now that we've fully bummed you out
with
some unsolved cases, I'll let you complain first.
Okay. Mine is quick. I was actually reminded of it as we were recording this when we heard the most obscenely loud car horn coming through the window. And I just want to say, living in New York, I think it's especially bad, but just like there's a time and a place for you to honk your horn if someone doesn't see that a light change and you want them to move or like whatever it is. But people who just ride the horn for like 6 minutes because they're annoyed that they're in traffic or they're annoyed that someone in front of them is being too slow, that's not what that's for. And that's not helping fucking anything. Like, no. How many times have you been in like your New York apartment and you just sit there and listen to someone just like sitting on the horn for 2 minutes?
Like literally sitting on it, like sitting in the driver's seat, turning around and just popping a squat right
putting
on
their
horn.
Butt on it because they're so annoyed, apparently. Like that's not how horns work. No. It's so annoying.
I mean, I'll tap my horn if I'm sitting at a light for like too long, or if it's like truly like a, but yeah, it's usually for, it's
right,
for
but
emergencies.
You tap it. Yeah. You do not.
Yeah. It's just, a little beep.
Yeah.
Beep, beep. That's fucking annoying.
Yeah.
I feel like, can I give you some unsolicited advice?
Yeah, please.
Just the number of complaints you've had about this apartment. It's a great apartment, but maybe you need to find somewhere.
There's a lot
quieter.
Of noises. It's actually not, it's not that loud of an apartment. Like we're not right on the street. Like we face a tree, which is nice, but.
That is true. I'm looking at it right now. Cool. Is it my turn?
Mm-hmm.
My complaint is pretty specific, but it's been annoying me for what year is it? 2018? Probably about like a solid 3 years, which is this. So before the relationship I'm currently in, I was in another relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Been in a few. And with a young gentleman who broke my heart in a pretty, I would say, traumatizing way overseas.
Okay. Yep.
And it's not even about that. Like I'm well past that breakup. However, what really fucking annoys me is that he still follows me on social media.
Yep.
And this is just kind of a question I have, because like one of the first things I did was unfollow him from Instagram.
Yeah.
Because like, I just don't need to see that. Like, I don't need to see like you like happily living your life while I'm like miserable.
Right.
And then at a certain point, it's like, you're not in my life anymore. And that's, guess what? That's okay.
Like you don't need a constant reminder. I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this situation.
But it's also the fact that I was really close to this family. So I also am followed by his, I thought of this recently because I have an unfollower app and I'm obsessed with it. And it's a really great way to keep tabs on who my real true friends are. And I recently was unfollowed by his younger brother, and I got the note or saw it on the app and I was like, yeah, you fucking should have unfollowed me 3 years ago when your brother and I broke up.
Right.
And I'm still following. It's different because it's, I guess, a little bit because we're from the same hometown, and like one of his sisters was in the same grade as I was in high school. So like, I get it. Like there's some overlap here and there. But especially with this particular ex, and it's like, it's not like he's like liking my shit, but I'm like, why do you want to see my business in your timeline?
Yeah. It doesn't make any
it's
sense.
It's like, kind of just like fucking leave me alone.
Right.
And it feels different with Facebook, because I think that the process of going through to unfriend someone on Facebook is really dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a really nice little mute button.
Yep.
Which I love to use when there's
full
people.
Advantage of that.
But, and I realize it's not so much a complaint as it is kind of just like a, what are you doing?
Like, if you're listening to this,
like, is my social media presence just like that fucking incredible?
I mean, that's really annoying. It's not like the kind of thing where you can be like, hey, can you just like unfollow me?
Yeah, I know we haven't spoken in over 3 years, but,
like, cool.
I think it's more just also like it opens up a general conversation about social media behavior and norms and like, why?
Mm-hmm. That's how I feel.
Like, why do we need to, like, this, the etiquette of it all? It seems, as I'm saying it right now, I'm like hearing my own pettiness in this all. It's like, it really doesn't fucking matter. And like, it's
right.
It's also not that I'm like actively out there, like keeping tabs of if he's following mm-hmm. me, like, and like also like what he's doing with his like now new ugly boyfriend. It's kind of more just like,
you're like, but I've never even seen him. Like, I have no idea what he looks like. So
no, but it's simply because I have an app that tells me when people unfollow me, and I'm like TikTok. You can go now. Like, you can leave.
This is done.
And so is this episode, because I'm annoying myself.
Yeah. I think we've gotten everything out that we can today.
Yes. As always, please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. And you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at RWF Podcast, and send us your spooky shit and suggestions and et cetera to rwfpodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for hanging out with us.
And also our Patreon.
Oh, yes.
Patreon.com/RWF podcast. If you feel so inclined to throw us $5 a month for some bonus content, we'd love to have you.
Yes, we would. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Cool.
Bye bitches.